Welcome to the Gigi and Saji podcast. Wisdom, world explorer, and shenanigans, we have it all. Gigi and Saji is a podcast where we talk with all kinds of people all around the world, expert or not so much expert, but we discuss anything that is life relevant to us, about books, TV shows, and anything creative that we want to talk about. I hope you enjoy this podcast and welcome to the show.
Hello, kinners and sinners! I'm your host, Savage Saji, and today it's all about Our Crow Crew by Leigh Bardugo. I'm in the company of my Chaos Gang again. Welcome, my fellows from the Revolution Series Collective. Today is a double Pisces fun again. Kimchi using she, her pronouns. Mika using whatever floats your boat today. And Gigi, she, her, and he, him. It was such a mess last time talking about the Grisha. But today is going to be death and destruction. Are you ready, guys?
Sure. Always.
Death and destruction. Okay, yeah, wicked. Let's go.
Okay, what is one thought you had in your head throughout the series while reading it?
One?
Just kick it up.
Am I supposed to start again? Or do you want to start?
Yeah, we just did the same.
Honestly, when I started, just a big, huh? What? Who? What's happening? That was sort of for the first 100 pages, what was going on. Because it was just so different. I had just finished the third Grisha book and it was just so different. And dare I say it, much, much, much better in terms of everything, really. So there was confusion. And then, oh my God, what's happening next? What's happening next? What's happening next? So yeah, that was basically everything. And obviously with every plot twist, oh no, she didn't. Oh no, Cass didn't. So yeah, that sums it up, I think.
Yeah, I think it was the same for me because Grisha was like, it's like from, I don't know the exact date, but it's a few years ago that it was released. And I was like, okay, it's like, it has some typical young adult tropes. And I was like, okay, yeah, it's entertaining and it's fun, but it's not like, but Six of Crows was something else. It was better in so many aspects. So I was like, in the first half of the book, I was just like, whoa. I think I was like overwhelmed a bit in a positive way. But yeah, then it was like a page turner, like, wow, every plot twist in every chapter and every character. I was like, wow. Yeah.
So I had three thoughts. I came into this book series with my team constantly telling me, you're Kaz. And I was like, so let's see what the fuss is about. And then his opening chapter comes and it's the iconic line of Kaz Brekker doesn't need a reason. And I was like, oh, here we go. Oh, damn it. And like his opening chapter already was like, God damn it. I don't know who he is. And he's so like that was just one chapter. Second thought that kept on running through my head was literally head empty Kaz Brekker. And the other thing is, no one in this book is 17 apart from Willen. Like that's the first thought that I had when I came into the series.
Nice. Well, mine was, Kaz, you goddamn fucking bastard. You know, I thought, okay, now I'm done. And then Kaz Brekker comes around the corner again. So done, really. Oh my God.
You're welcome.
Yeah, the next question is, which of the characters are you most like? Can be personality or aesthetic? I mean, Gigi already answered that, but the others, what do you think?
Well, I said this to Lola when we were texting about Six of Crows after she'd finished it. I said, I would like to be more like Matthias. And probably when I get into my grumpy dad mode, because I'm like a dad kind of friend, I get into, like, I get close, but probably I'm more like Waylon, because I'm also a chaotic mess that blows stuff up. Not actually literally, but like, in terms of, like, I'm not a chemistry teacher. I do not touch stuff like that. I don't understand it. I don't blow things up, but like, in terms of just chaoticness, I'm probably most like him, but I'd prefer Matthias, so.
And a cinnamon roll like Waylon.
Well, I'm a Hufflepuff. I've got to be a cinnamon roll, right?
I can't
not be.
Oh my god, we're both Pisces and both Hufflepuff. I mean,
I'm not surprised at all.
I think that all the characters are like way too intense and cool for me. Like, not saying I'm not cool, but like, I'm introverted and like innocent. So I think like I want to be Nina, but it doesn't work every day. But yeah, she was like the character I was like, oh god, I wish I was her. So I think that counts. Yeah.
Well,
please no essay from you, Gigi. Just a short answer. You don't have to elaborate why you're Kaz.
I mean, my team calls me that. Like, to be honest, like, it's really creepy because, like, I need to make a list, honestly, on how many things we have alike. It's, like, in some chapters, I literally took, like, put the book away and was like, okay, I need to talk to Lee about this and how she got into my house. And, like, or where Kaz Brekker comes from in her imagination, or if there's a parallel universe where something has happened that I don't know about yet. And then on the other, but I would say, like, the dangerous thing about me is I'm a combination of Kaz and definitely Nina to an extent of my confidence and flirting with people.
Also, just as a side note.
Yeah.
Like, you can't see Lola right now, but if you would see Lola right now, you would sort of think that, I don't know what the actor's called, I've not learned any actors' names yet, but the actor they cast for Kaz and Lola, if you were told they were siblings,
you would
actually not be, like, you wouldn't doubt it. I mean, I'm honestly saying that, because in terms of, I've seen one of the promo pics where he's with Jesper, and just the look on his face, this is a look you can get from Lola. So in terms of, they look alike, actually. So Lola is already, if she wants to cosplay Kaz, already,
yeah, please.
There's not a lot you need to do about that, so.
Oh my god, yeah. Yeah. Obviously, but I have to add, Lola is not that much of an asshole like Kaz.
Yeah, I mean, not to you, maybe.
Okay,
I was about to say, I mean, I guess she can be if she wants to, so
yeah, Lola is more selective who she treats like that. Like, she's a very nice person, but she's more selective in terms of.
That explains a lot, because I have a split personality. I am Inej with Jesper's brain, and Gigi is sometimes so fucking done with me, I know that.
Like, can you imagine, like, I'm Kaz, right? And there's this left-hand man trying to deal with his guns at 2 a.m. sending me messages. And then when I actually need to get work done, that's when she flips into Inej.
Oh my god. Yeah, I am every Tumblr text post of Jesper you can imagine. Like, that's me. Oh, great. Okay, tell me a very vivid scene in your head you can't forget.
Oh. Probably the whole plot. Like, they are at the ice court, and it's most of the book, it seems, and when Nina is confronted with, I forget his name, but the witch hunter general, the Driscoll, I forget his name, I don't remember. And when she, sort of the whole scene between them, when she flirts with him, when she tries to get close to him, and then he goes off, and then Matthias seems to have betrayed them, but he hasn't. And that whole sequence, that's where it got me, because I was ready to think that Matthias had actually betrayed them. Like, I didn't expect him to do, like, to play a double game here with his old mentor, I suppose, his father figure.
I think for me it's in Crooked Kingdom, I think. When Kaz, like, confronts his people, the directs, like, it's so vivid in my head where he's like, listen, I'm the boss here, like, I think it's pretty close to the end of the book, where he's just like, you can't fuck with me, basically. And I was just like, I remember reading it and I was like, wow, the balls of this man. So yeah, I think that was for me, it was so impressive. I'm just like, whoa, wow. I think about that scene a lot.
Yeah, hands down, we'll do the same. Oh gosh, it's really hard to pick because I've literally just, before we jumped on this episode, I literally finished Crook Kingdom, so it's very present in my head. And there are so many scenes where I'm like, I need to process this. For Six of Crows, I think it's one of the strongest scenes that, or like two of the strongest scenes is Knife, I, and Omen, and Cass. That scene is just, oh, it's so good. It's just chef's kiss. Yeah. It's just the right kind of fantasy gore to me in that sense of like what's happening in that scene. And then the other thing is where the whole plot twist happens with at the Ice Court with the whole like, I forgot the name, basically where the whole, where they, I think it's Matthias, Nina, Kuwe, and Cass, when he comes out of the shadow, the whole tree situation, and then they jump down the into the water and stuff, like that whole scene, the revelation of like the god and stuff and like what they worship and stuff and what the actual trial is and stuff, when that happened, I was just, oh, the conflict in there, like genuine, any conflict between Matthias and Cass in the first book about the soul, like religion and believing and that kind of stuff, Fjordan conflict, was super interesting to me to see. And as for Crook Kingdom, one of the scenes that shocked me was when we find out what happened to Willen's mom and that she's put into an asylum. I was like, Vanek, you're such an asshole. Like, oh my god. And then the most like emotional scene is the scene between Inesh and Cass talking basically about their past and him doing the bandages with her, and I was just, I have to get through this book for the podcast, but I'm so emotionally wrecked by this whole chapter. It's just, sometimes, it's just like, the thing is, sometimes Lee does this thing of, she makes the human conflict so, like, even poetical in a sense, like, that scene is just, there's so many metaphors of meanings and emotions in this chapter, and I'm just like, I'm in pain. But yeah, so many great moments, to be honest. It's like, I could actually, for each crow, I could pick a couple of moments that I really enjoyed reading.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have two very vivid scenes in my head. The first one is where everyone is cramped up in this room. Or is it the transporter? I don't even remember. It's been a while. I've read it. So with the other people before they break into the Ice Court, is it the transporter?
Yeah, when they landed with the prisoners.
Yeah. Oh my god. That scene was so genius. That got me like, oof. And the second one is when Kaz is confronted with the little kid. I mean, that scene in the house.
Oh my god, yes.
Where he says something like, the monsters on their bed are gonna eat you alive or something. I nearly flipped my book against the wall because, Cass, you fucking bastard. I couldn't stop laughing at him. That was absolutely genius. Yeah. Okay, next. What are your feelings towards Nina and Matthias at the beginning and at the end?
Not different. I liked them from the beginning, and I thought that they had a very interesting relationship. I liked the fact that they had to figure things out between themselves and deal with their inner conflict before they could deal with the conflict between themselves, sort of. And that they actually sort of found a way to admit that even if we're very different and believe in different things, we can still be together, because I think even if it's not a romantic relationship, even on a friendship level, I think that's a very important step you have to take if you have two characters that are in conflict, that they work out the fact that you can be different, but you can still, you know, be in a team, you can still work together, and you can still like each other. It's okay to believe in different things. Like, that's no, it doesn't have to be a contradiction.
Yeah, I think I just totally agree with what you said. I liked them from the beginning. I was like interested to read like more of the backstory and stuff, but it's not like I was against them or whatever. I was just like, interested in what's going to happen. And as you said, like, how they're going to overcome this conflict between them and find a way to, like, even just be friends and then more at some point.
I also thought them, like, in the beginning, I was sometimes a bit like, oh, guys, get it together. Like, I felt cares on many levels of, like, these two. But I just found the conflict in general interesting, also from Nina's side, because when she was in the Grisha verse, I didn't really care about her. I was just like, oh yeah, she's with Zoya and the like cool girls from the palace and stuff. And the fact that she got to have a bigger role in that sense in the whole duology was super interesting for me to read and gave her so much more character depth, which I really appreciate and didn't see coming in that sense. And like, I also thought she was just so unique in a way of a strong female character, which doesn't happen too often sometimes in the fantasy genre of, just, you know, almost like a standalone in a sense. Like, she, like, it was nice to see that how it all developed with Matthias, but then her story in itself was so interesting to me as well, because that her whole conflict of like being loyal to the Grisha and then somewhere being in Katadam and that kind of stuff. As for the relationship situation, it's so clever made. It's super clever made, because it's also always, there's some political problem in there as well, with the whole like, he's from Friadar, she's a Grisha, on that kind of sense. And I have a thing for these kind of things. Also, I love, and this is what I so loved about Nina. She was so unapologetic about her actions. Like, the amount of times she tells him she wants to kiss him, or like, she just flirts with him in all kinds of situations. I love that, because Nina just takes the cake that she wants. And in that case, it was sometimes Matthias.
Oh, I love your answer. That also leads up to the next question. Some of our listeners might not know that all of you three are writers. So let's praise Leigh Bardugo a bit. From a writer's perspective, how do you see her writing style, her ideas, the representation of people, and her brain in general?
That's a big question. There's a lot in there. I might be one. No, I try to keep it I try to be German, keep it efficient. Well, she started out as this very, not basic young adult writer, but I mean, she started out, and you could tell that she just started out, because she tried to keep it simple. And I think it's something she also says in her own interviews. Yes, I did do the simple approach. I had a first-person narrative. I kept it simple, but then she develops. Like, she you can see how she grows and learns to write better throughout each novel. And then with Six of Crows, obviously, she pieced together a masterpiece, because that takes so much planning and plotting, especially these plot twists that are not like you can see them coming. They're so well done that they're not shock value, but they're very cleverly done. And she also says in one of the interviews that writing someone like Cass, who's much more intelligent than the average person, and like she said, he's much more intelligent than I am, she obviously had to... that takes planning, and it takes a long time to sort of get into. And as for an author, that's sort of the ultimate goal, to be able to write all the different characters with, first of all, their own voice. It's a big issue with multiple POVs. And then the fact that they're always going to be very different from who the author is, also in terms of intelligence. With Alina, I wouldn't have been surprised if Leigh would have said, Alina is a lot like me in many ways, because she's a first-person narrator. There's a lot of me in that. That's easy to write, but that's not the case in Six of Crows. And then, of course, she decided to go a route where she could make it diverse without it feeling forced, because she said, well, Katadam is this, well, mash of cultures just coming together. So it makes sense to have all these characters there. So it's a very natural diversity that she's included, which I prefer over authors just putting diversity in for diversity's sake. So she's found a natural way to do it. I think she does it justice. All these characters are unique. Like, they're not reduced to, oh, he's a person of color, so that's why he's there. But they all have a really good purpose to being there, and they're very unique. And yeah, I think that she did just a fabulous job. And she's very sort of reflective of her own writing. If you read her interviews, that she's very, like, she doesn't even need anyone to criticize her work. She's already so good at picking up herself what went wrong and what went well, that I just think she's one of the best out there. So, yeah, I just have praise for her, really.
Yeah, I agree. Like, as I said, with, like, the Grisha, it was... I mean, it was her debut, and it was great, but as I said, it was had many tropes, and it was rather easy, and from the plot as well, it's, like, typical young adult fantasy. But with Six of Crows, just, like, you know that she... Like, you notice how she improved, like, so much, and the world building and everything just perfect. And what I, as an author, really admire is that when you have so many characters, it's hard to, like, as Mika said, make them all unique. Like, they all have their own voice, and they're all, like, so different from each other, but also so interesting. And it's so hard, like, from personal experience, I can say that it's so hard for me to, like, make characters, like, distinct from each other and not like, oh, they're the same or they have the same interests and speak the same. And she did a very good job. And, like, you kind of like every character. And even if you're not, like everyone but have your favorites, it's still that you, like, everyone is interesting. And I think that's, like, something I really admire, because that's not easy to do when you have so many characters.
First of all, I think kudos to her. She did something that I never had in any author. She made me like every character. And that's something that I don't think that ever happened in any series before, because, like, in a sense of, like, I'm not favorite of any character. Obviously, I have characters that I don't like, but she made me like them as enough for me to care about every story. Like, even with the villains, like, Fanek, Tante Helen, Rollins and stuff, like, all the mafia bosses and stuff. Like, you keep thinking about, like, so what's their stand? What's happening here? Like, you keep thinking about all these things because you become part of the system once you start reading Six of Crows. And that's brilliant, and that's something that I hadn't had in, like... And also, like, to be so drawn to a book series that hadn't happened since... I believe Percy Jackson, to just be so into it and stuff. And as someone that is from Europe and has multiple DNA European strengths, it's like Ketterdam is just this clash of cultures for me from a European perspective. And it's just, but so uniquely in a sense as well, put together as well. Like, it's, I couldn't even, like, it's, in my head, it's almost like as if you put London, Amsterdam, and then Budapest together, and then that's Ketterdam. And to then have this variety of characters is so amazing, because what Mika just said, they are just not limited to their diverse backgrounds. Like, they are so much more. And it's, especially, I think, when we're talking from Inesh's perspective, I think that's just chef's kiss, hands down, one of the best backstories in there. And when it comes to the whole, like, storytelling and plotting, absolutely kudos. Because, yeah, it's strange. Like, I can't really reveal much about my series, can I? but it's thinking, or like it's storytelling that I see in my own writing as well, and it's super clever made, because what Mika just said, like, it's not only like shock value plot twists, which you often have in young adult especially, and to me it's not young adult, you know, like what you read in there's so much more than just your average young adult story that you pick up when you want to pick new books and stuff. So that's just absolutely amazing how it all comes together and how it all makes sense. And maybe there are some, like, things in there that don't make sense at all, but she covers it up, apparently. Or, like, she has made it so believable that you just don't really question certain things. Like, I would have to go into real deep dive and dig into there to be like, oh, but wait, like, there's a logic point or something like that. Like, she made that very clever. And what I think is also so great to see is that in Six of Crows, for me, she breaks a lot of, like, heroes / villains / anti-hero types that we've seen before, because it's a lot about moral conflicts. Like, it's a lot about moral conflicts. Like, you get to know all these characters, and you as a reader can constantly go along and go like, oh yeah, I understand that he did this. I understand that he did this. Or, no, I don't understand. Like, he's still a shit person because he did this. Or something like that. So, like, the reader really gets into this mindset of, like, oh, I want to, like, would I go with this? Would I do the same? What would I do in that kind of sense? And I think that's always the best books, when you get so soaked up into this whole universe that you start to question, like, what would I do?
Oh, so great, all of your answers. Well, I am not a writer. I'm an image and filmmaker. And the way I jump on things is always the visualization in my head. So that's also one thing I want to add. Oh, the whole atmosphere in Ketterdam and all this universe is just so extremely good that I am so, 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 so excited what's going to happen in the visualization in the Netflix series. Just wanted to add that. Praise you, Libadugu, for your aesthetic. Okay, anything you want to add, important scenes or something you have to comment on our gals and pals from Ketterdam, a love declaration, a hate tweet?
No, just the fact that it's not going to stay a duology, possibly, because it's been confirmed that there will be a third book, so it's no longer a duology, so...
Since when?
It's been a while. I don't think there's a date yet. I think there's only... I'm not sure if there's even yet, but she confirmed that there will be a third one. She's working on a third one.
I mean, talking about how it was like an open
ended. And I literally fucking stated that this is not finished. I did it again. I knew it. Okay. Oh, yeah, I'm cool. I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine. Crooked Kingdom has not damaged me at all.
I think what I like, it could stay a duology, but she decided, no, I have more in me. And I think it was a decision that she didn't make lightly, which is another thing that, you know, kudos to her, because it's also a way to earn money, let's be real here. So she could just cash out on it, but that's not what she's doing. I think she had a really good think about whether she would continue, because you can ruin it with a third one. Because you have to keep up, you know, the level of writing that she's been at. So, and I think she's taking a while. I think she takes about 2 years at least to write one of these books. So, because they are so
complex. You have to if you write something like six
I mean, she's not Stephen King, who just writes a book in a day. So,
yeah.
with questionable, sometimes questionable quality.
I also think that, like, at the end of Crooked Kingdom, you just kind of, I mean, it could stay as a duology. Like, you know, okay, this could work as an ending, but at the same time, you know, the story of these characters is not over yet. That's what we see in King of Scars, because Nina appears again and has, like, it's like one of the main characters, because I think Lee knew that this was not over for any of them. And maybe, I mean, you could let it be a duology and be like, okay, now it's up to the reader to, like, spin a story how this is going to go. Or, like, she could just be like, maybe I will do it. So, I think she really saw that, okay, there's more to these characters we haven't seen yet, and that's like King of Scars is a good example for that. And so I'm excited that there's going to be a third book, because yay!
I just hope they print it so it fits the others.
Oh, yes.
My pet peeve, if a continuation of a series does not fit the other print runs, I hate it. It's an aesthetic thing, you know?
Yeah.
One more thing I can add is, like, I think it's a very brave thing for her to give Cass a personalization from her own life as a character, because it makes him even more unique in her writing. And what I always say about my characters, there's always some truth in the character writing. So the fact that she did that so openly with Cass is just a kudos from my side, because it makes him even more... What can I say? I'm biased. I'm biased about this character and that we have so much in common, apparently. But it makes it also so believable. And yeah, as like some of the scenes that she wrote, it's just so real and raw. And I think everyone who wants to write a book or wants to go in that direction should have a read of, like, if Grisha is not for you, then read Six of Crows. I think you should read Grisha first to just understand. Like, first of all, there are lots of Easter eggs in Six of Crows and Crook Kingdom as well. And then also to have the deeper understanding of her writing process. I think it's always good to go back to the roots first, and then please don't go back to Revolution Blue if you can find it somewhere.
Well, I have three books sitting here. I can just give them to people if you are bad.
If you want to get fired, sure, you can do that.
Fire me if you can.
I think you hear Jesper talking out of her brain. So, what was my point? The fact that she just this honest writing, everyone should take a notch of it. And because like there was, as I said, like it's been 2 years since I danced around Six of Crows, since it came up with like, you should read this, it reminds me of your book series. And I was like, And lastly, I'm just here and I'm just so amazed, and it's so inspiring as well to see how magical dark fantasy, urban fantasy can still be and is still out there. And it's a real treasure.
Oh, I loved all your all your answers. Oh, great. But let's go on to the quick fire questions. And the stress is on quick, so...
Not like last time.
Not like last time.
Okay, we're all German. We try to be efficient.
Okay. Which crow criminal skill would you like to have?
Sleight of hand. My brain just went blup, so that's the first thing that came up. I would like to be good at, like, weapon stuff. Let it be guns or knives. That's, like, just pretty cool.
I mean, I'm Cass Brecker, so... I guess lockpicking / sleight of hand. Basically, any gambling accessory and magic trick, which I basically already... I would say I don't have these skills, but I mean, I can do a bit of both, I guess. Like, lockpicking is... I'm not going to go into that. I sound like... maybe there's going to be another podcast episode where I talk about these things.
I mean, Ines can do parkour shit, so I'm taking that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Also nice, but yeah. Okay, if you were in a criminal gang, what would your job be?
Probably the planning. Because both as a teacher and as a writer, that's just something that you do a lot. You plan lessons, you plan novels, you plan plot lines, that's just a lot of what you do. You plan strategically, preferably.
I literally have no idea. I don't think I'm made for a criminal gang, because I'm not clever enough to do the planning, and I'm not like confident enough to do like the seduction, and I'm not good enough to be a leader. I mean, Lola, you know me best out of everyone here, but
Kimchi, can you drive a car?
Yeah, but not like, I'm not the best driver.
Okay.
Kimchi's just basically like Wylan. She just gets drawn in for some reason.
So yeah, I have no idea. So the bystander who sometimes messes everything up, I guess.
I mean, you guys call me Head of Evil, so do I have to say anything else?
No.
The question is more, what would I not do? Cook, probably. Like some other people.
Oh, I would cook. I would cook, so here we have it.
Good.
Oh, man. Yeah, so no surprise from my side. I'm the right-hand man.
Yeah, apparently she is.
Okay, next question. Who do you hate most, and why is it Tante Helene?
I'm not sure I hate her. Like,
quick. Yeah, you're not sure. Quick. That's exactly.
I don't think actually that in Six of Crows and Crow Kingdom, no one was. I didn't find anyone annoying in the sense of the character annoyed me. It was more of how they slowed the plot or ruined plans, seemingly. Obviously, that was all for the plot twists, but which wouldn't have happened if there hadn't been any. Like, if nothing goes wrong, you can. But the plot twist will not be the same wow effect, so. I'm not sure I hated anyone. Everyone is very well written and very interesting, and that even the ones that I don't like particularly, because they just are not written to be liked in that sense, as a, you know, because they're the villain.
Not like I the Darkling.
No, the fate. Yeah, no, because I think the Darkling just lacked in terms of. Yeah, it's just if I'd gotten his perspective, that would have been a different story. Because if you compare him and Kaz has also a bit of a toxic vibe sometimes, but you get his perspective. And that makes it more understandable. And that's what was lacking with the Darkling. You can't really understand him because it's just true. Alina's perspective. So, yeah.
Well, we just like really went off topic again.
No, but just say, I didn't hate anyone. That's my answer. So, like,
yeah, I think me neither. I think like Van Eck is a pretty strong contestant for like a character to be hated. But it's still like that's still very interesting and like, yeah, just. I mean, hate is always a strong word, but yeah, Van Eck was, is that even his name? Yeah.
Yeah. Van Eck Senior.
Yeah. he's not that nice. But yeah.
So. Now I come. Yeah, to be honest, Van Eck and Tante Helen shared and the thing is, like, it takes a lot for me to even get to the consideration of hating a character. I think that doesn't really happen often, unless you're Zeus from Percy Jackson or Umbridge. But the thing with Tante Helene is she did too much fucking shit to Inesh. So I'm just like, I'm 100% feeling Cass on this one as well. That's just shit that can't be unseen. And then the same thing with Van Eck, because it's just... the thing is, like, I thought until book two that I was not strongly attached to Willen, like, compared to the other crows. And then the whole shit came with his mother, and I was like, God! Someone just put him in candy floss and put him away and just... yeah, so these two are the strong... Yeah, the thing is with Pekka Rowlands and what's the other guy, Per Haskell, they are just a bit of idiots, right? Like, fully speaking Cass here, but it's just, yeah, like, my God. I almost felt a bit sorry for Pekka at the end because I was just like, you're just a sad guy, right? You're just a sad guy. You're just a sad guy. And Per Haskell was like, oh, you don't own this gang and stuff. And Cass is like, yeah, I do. I'm just like, I can't really hate these people because I don't really care for them enough.
They're just pathetic.
Yes. Just like,
Yeah, really solid answers. Okay, a character other from the Crows who you like or who surprised you?
Controversial and it's funny because I don't remember his name, but I like the Witch Hunter General. Maybe this is because of King of Scars, but I just like him. I find him very interesting as an antagonist. I wouldn't even say he's a villain. He's just an antagonist. Like he isn't this full on absolute evil. He just disagrees with what you as the reader would, you know, sort of agree with. So, probably him.
I'm just going to say it, and I'm not going to elaborate, because Nikolai. Okay. <that's it>.
I mean, it's kind of hard to pick, because I literally just roasted the whole... Mafia gang. I would say what I thought was interesting reading about was definitely Geordi. This whole thing, like, backstory of Cass was just like sad. So you could say Geordi. And there is this assassin that fights Inesh. I forgot her. Is it Dayasha?
Oh, yeah, she was interesting. She was great.
I thought she was really cool. Because it was almost like a weird mirror situation for Inesh to face her and fight her and stuff like that. And she seemed pretty cool. I mean, I was kind of annoyed at Zoya in this book. I was just like, you just jump in here and have a go at Nina. Like, no. I was just like, go away. Like, but I found it cool that the whole thing kind of like started to intertwine and got connected again. And Nikolai and Cass talking. That hilarious. I love it.
Okay. Can we all agree that the characters are all about 25 to 30 years old in their heads?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd say they're definitely in their 20s. Because thing is, I'm a teacher, right? So I deal with teenagers from a day-to-day basis. Not at the moment, because I'm still finishing studying. But like, I can assure you, teenagers are not supposed to be that smart. They don't have to be that smart yet. They're still growing. That's the whole point of being a teenager. You're still a little stupid. You know, and that's still true for your 20s, but in your 20s you can have, you know, sort of you're more mature, like you're still, that's when you really grow into who you're going to be. Because the 20s you change a lot. So that's why I would also agree. This is new adult to me then, their 20s, absolutely.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, the plot of Six of Crows, Crooked Kingdom, or La Casa de Papel, also known as Money Heist.
Bitch.
You're welcome.
So I'm. Well,
you're asking me Denver versus Casabreca. That's not fair.
I have no idea what Money Heist is, so.
It's a Netflix show, but I haven't seen it either, so.
Okay, you both have to watch it.
I'm not into these kind of.
How the amount shows, of people who have told me to watch that, and I'm just like, yeah, well, eventually, and then I start another K drama, so.
Yeah,
if you like Six of Crows, you will eventually like that too, because the plot is
Is it fantasy though?
No, it's not fantasy.
Yeah, then I won't like it. I find these kind of things tedious, and I don't get into them really. I find them boring.
I know that I'm gonna like it, but I still like the motivation to start.
it won't keep my attention.
But like out of Crooked Kingdom and Six of Crows, Mikael, what was like your favorite plot?
Oh dear. Probably Six of Crows, because just the whole Ice God Heist thing was just awesome. Which is, again, Crooked Kingdom is still amazing, but that was sort of, it had a different approach. Like, it wasn't the same kind of plot. It wasn't a heist plot in that sense. So,
yeah.
I'd go for Six of Crows.
Yeah, I agree, me too. Like, I also think that's something you don't really read that often in books, like this heist thing and like with fantasy and everything. So that was, it's just different from everything else, kind of. So yeah, Six of Crows, it is.
Gigi's face is like, you bet you fucking didn't.
Yeah, first of all, I love heist stories. Like, I'm also a fan of Ocean's 11 and stuff, so. Especially the female version, where I believe it's Kate Blanchett is super hot in a suit.
Amen to that. Also, yeah. as a movie, it does keep my attention. Does just not as a show. Mm, just adding
that's a fair point. Yeah, I'm choosing. I never thought this day would come, but I'm choosing Six of Crows. I mean, to be honest, like, ask me again when the TV show comes on and the way they pull the heist off in the TV show I want to see if it's as amazing as it was in that book. And just genuinely Six of Crows, because the Ice Court story is just these 200 pages in the Ice Court, I was sweating. I was just sweating. But I also, and this is the funniest thing, I was constantly, like, there was only one moment where I didn't know what was happening when the whole, like, tree situation would happen. Otherwise, I was so on board with Cass, and, like, knowing what he was going to do or what would possibly happen and then see it coming to life, that was, like, a dream in a dream situation, and I love that.
Also, am I the only one who thinks that you can't really compare like watching a heist like as a TV show and like reading about it? Because it's so different when you read it and imagine it yourself, like how it looks and everything. So I don't really think you can compare it or choose one.
Yeah, also controversial, but I find plot twists nicer in books.
Yeah, most of the time.
Because in shows, they're quicker. They just happen much faster. And in the book, there's more build-up and I get more character insight.
And little hints here and there.
So. Exactly. Yeah. So I think the reread value is just there. Like, there's more reread value in terms of finding all the hidden hints that you didn't notice because you didn't expect that. So.
Yeah, you definitely have a point there. So how much are we excited for the Shadow and Bone Netflix series then?
Very. Considering that I don't think Netflix has failed to deliver good book adaptations, at least none of the book adaptations where I've read the book. So I have to, I can't judge shows where I've not read the book. They've never messed up so far. So I'm confident that they've done a good job. And Lee was also heavily involved. So I think it will be good. It will be different. And I hope it will be different because I'd like to be surprised. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's already different because we get the Six of Crows gang from the start. And we get them prior to Six of Crows because Six of Crows obviously happens after the trilogy, just from a timeline perspective. So I'm excited to see what they did. Like, I'm not even excited to see scenes that I know from the book. I'm more excited to see what else there will be, like what added bonuses we'll get. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just excited to see the characters. Like, it wouldn't even have to be the plot of the books, but just like seeing the characters come to life, like with the actors and everything. That's just already something I look forward to so much. And then just the trailer like totally exceeded my expectations because everything was like already as I imagined it or better, which is really hard to do when you like adapt a book. So this is going to be exciting and I hope I don't have my expectations too high, but it's going to be a wild ride.
I mean, for someone who had the luck to see Freddie and Kit on stage, which I recently found out when I was going through my theater books and the privilege of living in London, it's just so very exciting to have them on a TV show and just generally that the cast is so British based and like European centered locations and stuff like that. It's just that makes me excited. And just generally, I think, yeah, it's one of the TV shows that I have a couple of TV shows, like a handful, which I'm like really hyping up, Money Heist being one of them, for example, when it comes like to new seasons and stuff. But I think this is also like, it's going to be visually very cool to see. And like Netflix is really going towards a direction of more diversity. And they are really trying to make certain changes and stuff. And Shadow and Bones is right fitting into that. Like it's the right step in the right direction of diversity changes for cast and representation and stuff. So I hope that it also kicks off a lot of, I don't know, inspiration for like producers and movie makers and stuff like that to see that we want this presentation and we want this diversity on screen and that we need it as well. Like it's, and especially in the fantasy genre, like it's time, like, God damn it. It's time. Like we need characters like Inesh and Alina and more female representation in that sense, as well as, you know, Kasbreka, who's also a disabled character and stuff like that. So, I want to see more of that and I hope it kicks off in the right direction for more presentation in that sense. And yeah, God damn it, I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely. Me as a filmmaker, hella excited. They also started off really good with a different approach, which I have never seen to this day from production yet, I think. And also the costumes and the settings, of course. Also, I will have a big conflict deciding if I want to cosplay Inej or Alina. So we will see about that, but I am so excited just to jump in every episode and analyze the shit out of it. Oh, great, great. Okay. I mean,
we already had a discussion about who we're going to cosplay, don't we?
Ah, oh, great. So, let's move on to the total truth part, where you can say anything you like without the others commenting on it. Can be about Six of Crows, can be about anything else, what you like. Speak.
Because that's something that happened to me recently in terms of, it has something to do with cancel culture, so bear with me. Authors that have diversity usually try very hard to make it good. There are rare instances where they just, you know, do it because then they can say they've done it. And if there's a case where they've really tried, don't have a go at them. Like, have a normal conversation with them. Don't have a go at them and, you know, accuse them of, I don't know, of God knows what. Be patient with them. Because there's so many white authors out there. And to be honest, I'm a white author. I try to have a diverse cast, but to be honest, there is a limit to how well I can write certain characters just because I don't have that same experience. I will not ever fully understand what it is like to be a person of color because I'm not. So just in terms of that, if a white author really tries to make, to give you good representation, then don't have a go at them. If you want to have a conversation with them, then try to help them become better. Sort of give them like criticism that they can work with, because they will listen and they will open. There's enough examples of authors doing that. So yeah, because I've just seen a lot of people really having a go at people and really being nasty about it. Don't do that, because that will put people off. Sort of in terms of trying that, it nearly put me off. Like, I got scared about writing about people of color because I was scared people would be nasty to me. So yeah, just don't do that. Just give us a chance to learn, because it's not really that easy. So yeah, just in terms of a writer's perspective, because I can't be everyone I write. There's a limit to my skills in terms of how well I can represent someone. I'm just one person. So yeah, it's my truth for today.
Okay, this was an entire essay, and I have no idea how to follow up to that.
I'm sorry.
No, it's like, I agree 100% with everything you say, especially as a writer myself. It's just very hard. I think I know what you're talking about, like, in particular. So I have no idea what to say. You might think that I can prepare these things by now, but I never do. So every time you say, I don't know. Do what? I have to say something? Because can I just say I agree with Mika? Is that enough of a truth?
Yeah, you can also say what food you like. I mean,
just as a follow up to clarify, this was not in defense of a certain J.K. Rowling, because she's one of these examples where I have a go at her. I was more talking about authors who actually try.
Yeah,
I do not include her in this. She does not try. Just to clarify that, in case someone would have a go at me for, what was that, J.K. Rowling? No, I would never defend that person.
What food I like? I don't. Let's just say that's my truth. German food is disgusting. And totally bland most of the time. I'm just going to say that. I'm like, not disgusting, but like, you know,
have you had
boring
British food?
It's boring. Yeah, Jesus. That's
bland. That's, but I'm like, sorry.
For British, it's still like, British has so much more influence from like Indian culture and all that. And Germans are just like, love that.
Did you just insult pretzels?
Yeah. I mean, pretzels are not like food. I mean, like real dishes, not like snacks or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
And because when
I'm
think about
potato salad today, I feel very German. And it's good potato salad.
Guys, which part of commenting not allowed did you not understand?
All of it, apparently. I'm sorry. No, it's okay.
I didn't want to start a whole debate.
I'm sorry. No, you're right. It can be right.
I am so done with this crew.
I apologize.
This combination of people will never happen again.
I doubt that, but okay.
Yeah. Okay, so you find German food disgusting. Next,
okay,
Lola.
Disgusting is a strong word. Like, it's bland and boring. Okay, next.
I'm
are you two done? Like, because we got up to three truths, right? Are you guys done? Or can I?
Yeah, no, of course I'm done. That was the only thing I could come up with, and it started a whole discussion.
Okay. So, I have one that is kind of scratching to a similar thing what Mika is talking about. It's, again, cancel culture. And I'm digging into the me cancel culture part because, and I've seen it on Tumblr, I've seen it on Twitter, I've seen it on other social media. If an author is supporting a TV show and is aware of the movie or production or the TV show, what's going on, has been on set, has been helped out, has been very satisfied and happy with what's going on, you trust the author. And I'm so fucking done with people still complaining about stuff before it has even come out. Mm. I've seen it. It's bullshit. And the fact that Lee, in that sense, I'm taking Shadow, it's also with other productions that I've seen before where people just get nasty about stuff before it has even come out and stuff, and completely ignore the fact that Lee is very happy about this. And I think you should respect that. And obviously, you can still criticize it in a sense of her own personal taste once it's come out. But if the author stands up for it and is happy and satisfied with what has come to life from her own imagination of what she did with the books, that's the best thing that can happen for an author. And if you're then still salty and so sad about your own life or whatever it is that gives you that pittiness drive, that's just, yeah, just don't do it, man. Like, pick on something else that you want to so-called criticize. But I think it's just nasty and bullshit and disrespectful towards the actor and everyone else that has put hard work into the production of costumes, makeup, cutting, sound, all that kind of stuff that goes into a production like that. So, yeah, just be a decent person in that sense.
I just, like, you both said such deep things, and I came with, like, German food is boring, and now I feel...
Well, I want to go back to just now pointing out that you're the Weiland of the crew, so
indeed. Also, that can be a deep discussion. like
you saw, yeah.
For everyone who's not German, if you are in Germany, we have a lot of region wise, we have a lot of differences. So if you go to Bavaria, I'd agree that food, nah, no thank you. If you'd go somewhere else, you know, I'd be okay. So, you know, it's
you have to consider that I'm vegan. So all the German food is very heavily animal-based. So that's like...
I'm a vegetarian, so I can, like, halfway understand where you're coming from. So, yeah, no, it's true. They like to eat meat in the morning for lunch and in the evening, and it's weird.
And as a drink, so...
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. What?
I've not heard this one before, don't and I'm not sure I needed to hear that one. Oh, dear.
It's really disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Are we done now?
Yeah, better end this now.
The next time, I'm going to make a high screeching noise if you do that again.
I love how you always say we're not allowed to, like, react, but still everyone is nodding. So the listeners can't hear that, but we're still reacting to what everyone's saying.
I think we should call it, like, the truth section from now on, or, like, the truth pop section, okay, and, like, see what happens.
Uh-oh. Oh, man. So, Gigi, you want to add another truth? Or are you done?
I would love to say that Cass and I don't have so much in common, but...
Well, Lola doesn't kill people in real life, only as a writer. So
no, I do that for her.
I'd say that's something that they don't really 100% share. In case anyone got concerned if they have to, you know, ring the police or something.
Yes.
Lola, are you specific? Have I ever killed someone? That's not, no.
I wanted to say something. I wanted to say something else, but then I was like, maybe this is making it worse. So I just shut up.
Oh, man. Okay. Okay, I think we can wrap it up here. I think we're going to skip the zodiac part because we did that last time.
Yeah, Casperka is still Capricorn with the rising Aquarius. No, hang on. Reverse. Casperka is still a Gemini with the rising Aquarius and Capricorn moon. And you kind of
Mika still has no idea what that means.
Yeah, I still have no idea what that means.
Then I would like to add Jasper is probably an Aquarius or a Gemini.
Libra.
Oh, he definitely has a lot of Libra energy. That would be the second thing. I mean, that would be the second thing that I would have guessed, but yeah.
Gemini. Yeah, because he's
Air sign gang. I mean, come on.
You know, I miss the good old times where we just assigned Hogwarts houses to characters, because that I still understood. But now I feel like a mom and their kids are just rambling on about something, and I'm just like, I'm too old, I don't understand.
You are basically the dad of our group, because if you are Matthias and I'm Cass, and
That would explain some of our editing conversations sometimes. It's just two heads going. We love each other. But work is serious.
Yeah, we love each other, but essentially sometimes I pull up my cane and Mika calls me Demjin. Is it Demjin how they pronounce it?
Sorry, what?
The way Matthias pronounces demon in the books, Demjin.
I have no idea. I don't remember that.
He's probably doing it with a much more raspy, sexy accent than I do.
I don't know. I can't do it. Lacking the balls for that.
Jesus, this episode is just a mess in it all.
any better than the last one, so
any last words?
Better not.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. There's no funerals.
Yeah, no funerals, no funerals. That's definitely, yeah. Okay, then let me just finish up this episode with, if you liked Six of Crows and Crooked Kingdom, I would advise you to jump onto the Revolution series by Elsie Hamilton. You might like it, so be prepared for that and what's coming from us. So, yeah, thank you for being here, Team Rev, and we'll see what happens next. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Bye, and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
If you can't get enough of us, don't you worry, we got social media for you to contact us, to talk with us, to have questions, to raise questions, and to raise your voice towards us. Gigi, which is me, you can find as Elsie Hamilton Arts on Instagram, as well as literally Elsie Hamilton all around the internet. Go to our site, revolutionseries.com, and you can also find extended social media contacts when it comes to Ref Series. Saji, which is known as Abel, you can find on social media on Instagram under a certain name. We also drop the links in the description. Have fun, contact us, and have a good day.